pleasure to be with you. Pleasure to have you on board. It's the Fan Morning Show. I'm JD Bugas, A-List 4-4, Blake Murphy. I gotta stop coming in here as early as I do. I gotta come in here, sit down in the chair, Vic plays the song, show starts. Because A-List breaks my brain with something every morning. I really have a tough time. Like, Blake and I are talking about how our cousins.
Yeah.
And A-List just sitting there vibing and just listening to Miley Cyrus, you're doing your thing. Mm. And then we're talking about how young our youngest cousins are. For some reason, it doesn't matter. A-List goes, my mom's sister's son has children and I'm older than them. Does that count? It took me like 25 minutes to unpack what she was saying. I'm like sitting here completely unraveling as I'm like, wait, just talk normally. Like that's your cousin, your mom's sister's kids. And no one thinks that your cousin's kids are your cousins. You're obviously older than people's kids.
Okay.
Good morning.
Yeah, the brain needs some warming up in the morning.
Yeah.
That was how I get you, you know, thinking.
You know what? It worked.
It's like a little brain test.
Did it work for you?
Blake already gets up with his brain fired up. He uses his calculator in the morning.
Do you?
Why would I need to calculate in the morning?
That's right, actually. You don't need
a calculator. Yeah, see, you don't even. He's a human calculator.
That's not true.
I send you things all the time, Blake, now, where I'm just like, hey,
fix
this out for me. Yeah. Hey.
Can you format this Excel spreadsheet?
Oh, yeah. You guys just wait. I've been slowly accumulating access to all the little fancy tools we have here at Sportsnet on like the broadcast side and stuff. And I'm just like sneaking logins from people.
Are you going to do my taxes?
I mean, I can.
Thank you.
I think yours are probably pretty straightforward.
Yeah. But still, it's just something that, you know,
I figure
you like to do it.
I don't hate it.
There's nothing I dread more than anything that's paperwork.
It's just like, it's not hard to do.
I know.
Like, I mean, for some people it's hard to do, but I don't have wealth.
Yeah. Can I tell you?
So it's easy when you don't have wealth.
I didn't do my taxes for like straight up a decade because I just was so afraid of what might happen. And I was so, I was so poor. I was afraid that any type of money that was, and the government owed me tons of money. And Ennis found out, and it was one of our like dumbest things ever. He's like, this is TurboTax. You put these numbers in here
and it gives
and this
you
is done and here's
answer.
Your money.
Yeah,
and here I was thinking I was some rogue running away from the tax man.
The annual tax return was a lifesaver because like by the end of every university year, I'd be just about out of money before my summer job started back up. And then you get that kick like in April and it's like, oh yeah. After the final exam, I have money for the first time in months.
Going out buying beers for the boys.
Yeah,
I got those.
That's when you upgrade from like Lake or Lager or Bohemian to a real beer.
But I thought that was the college thing. So I got those as well during university. Mm. But I thought that a lot of that kickback, that good old government kickback, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Was related to being a student. Because, yes, those were the sweetest. Those were the best of times. Getting a check that was for thousands of dollars, I'm the richest person who's ever lived. Oh, this is what Bill Gates feels like.
Yeah.
I remember there was this one thing about how when KG signed his contract, it was like he's making $75 a second. And that always stuck with me.
God.
And I'm like, I'm KG. This is how you end up in, what's the movie? Righteous Gems? No.
Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems. Righteous Gemstones is a show on HBO.
Excellent show.
Yeah, it's really good. So good
All the
morning.
Accountants are listening like, these guys are idiots.
Do you guys feel like we regressed pretty hard from our photo shoot yesterday?
Yeah.
Like we all dressed nice. We had one class photo day and now we're all sitting here. Although A-List isn't bad, but
no, I'm in athleisure.
I'm wearing a vintage sweater and jeans.
Yeah, so you're doing your kind of thing, actually.
But yeah, I was thinking about that this morning. Like last time we saw each other yesterday, we were like hair and makeup. Yeah. We were all dolled up. We had this photo shoot for Sportsnet. So stay tuned, everyone. You get to see what we look like, not just what we sound like.
Only my third time wearing makeup after two times for Halloween.
You didn't wear makeup for the fast breakdown?
No, I don't know how to do that.
We're going to have to get you some lessons.
Oh, you're going to get the same lesson I got from the lady at Sephora.
I was about to say, this segment sponsored by Sephora.
Sorry for that free ad. But I just
stop giving those away.
It's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward, the foundation thing, which is just like you tap a little thing, tap, tap, and then you pop it on your face.
You
and then I always cake the makeup into my eyebrows.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what did I do wrong? How does it?
Guys, I'll help you out.
Thank you. You got to get the T-zone. That's what they say. You got to get the T-zone. It's oily. All about the T-zone, Blake.
All right. Well, one of you guys, I'm recording the next Fast Breakdown after the show today. So one of you guys come by.
I will. I'll be your makeup guy.
Makeup me up.
So you can go to, I think I posted one of the pictures from the photo shoot on my Instagram at JD Bunkus. I think Ailish, you got it too.
Just Blake, on your story,
not the team
right?
Player. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sharing those.
We'll get the good stuff soon, I hope.
This is always the thing with me. Whenever I feel like, oh, awesome, someone was taking really good pictures. Oh, someone was taking pictures the whole time. The ones that I end up getting are like, not great. And I always think, I'm just not photogenic. But no, it's just that's just being ugly. You know, like that's just eventually when enough photographs mount and you're not happy with them, you just have to realize that it's not the camera. It's not the shoes, you know?
Professional photographer, yeah. Professional lighting setup and everything. Yeah.
And they took probably 300-400 of each of us and then photos of the three of us. So if we are not getting any good ones back, it's a sign.
I know you guys had a blast hamming it up. That took a lot out of me.
Yeah.
All smiling. My face is sore.
I don't like being perceived.
We're like, go Blake, go Blake. Do something. And you're
actually
like stoic.
Yeah, but it was fun. The crew was really fun down there.
Yeah.
They were great. They made everybody feel really comfortable. But those things are so funny because they're acting like we literally followed a model.
Yeah. like a legitimate model went before us. And then, I had to go after the model.
Yeah.
And she's just like stunning, knows all the poses, knows what to do with her body. Yeah. And I get in there. I'm like, usually I have a hockey stick in my hands and like I'm wearing my shoulder pads and this is my hockey
headshot. You should have done that, though.
I should have, but
you should have brought a hockey stick
around.
And you should have done the classic like hockey player pose of putting the hockey stick behind your neck and
so
shoulders
lame.
And held it. And gone, here you go.
They're like, do something, like, stand differently. I'm like, I don't.
We can at least mention the person. It's Shaylin, who's the new host of the Best of 590, which airs over the
course
of the weekend.
She was just on the radio before us.
Yes.
Well, guess what?
She's a true model.
Yeah.
So go look at her photos and then look at ours.
You know what? Actually, the only bad part of the day, because the day was great, the only bad part of the day was when she said, you guys could also be models. They're always looking for regular-looking people for beer ads.
Hard.
I was like, oh, thanks. She's like, yeah, I don't book beer. And she was really trying to be sweet.
She was.
But it made Ailish and I were saying there was, I think it was during your shoot.
Of course it was during mine. She's not going to say that about you two.
No, she was like, you guys could totally be models. You
that's who she was talking about. She was like, regular people. They need regular people for beer ads all the time. I never book beer ads. And
I'm like, because you're too glamorous to be drinking beer.
Yeah.
Even do they not do ads for vodka? Water.
Yeah, exactly. That was it. So Ailish and I will be looking to do beer ads.
Yeah, hit us up.
Ailish had one on her Instagram.
Oh,
I did
do a beer ad, but I was in full hockey gear.
Yeah, you were.
Anyway,
so our looks potentially concerning. Let us know. Gas us up.
Yeah.
All right. How about that? Gas us up. Go to our Instagrams at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, at E Blake Murphy. So Blake.
Yeah, I didn't share them on my concern index with those photos is a hard 5 out of 5.
The concern index.
Yeah,
it's time for the concern index.
Oh, by the way, before we get into the concern index, we're gonna do a lot of text line today.
Yes.
So keep them coming at 590. Obviously no Raptors, no Leafs last night, and no Raptors, no Leafs tonight. So we've got a little bit of time here to let you be the producer and kind of guide the conversation. We're gonna do those throughout the show, but especially the 7:30 and 8:30 blocks. So send a text to 590-590. Check back in at those half hours.
You didn't take your own great advice that you wrote down in the doc.
Oh, yeah. Encourage questions, not just people's bad takes. I had assumed that Ailish would be pumping the text line.
Yeah, I combed through it. But
she's pumping up that she's actually already a beer model.
I mean, like,
that was already like a weird winding road to get to her to stunt on the fact that she's already doing that. She's already modeling.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, obviously we want to hear your opinions on stuff and we'll talk about a couple different things throughout the show that you're welcome to chime in on. But questions are encouraged too, because that helps us kind of set the table for that 7:30 and 8:30.
You get to hear what goes on in Blake's brain. So ask good questions because He's got good answers.
Here's also the thing. We're tired, okay? Just do our work.
Yeah. Help us out.
Do some work for us. We give you this show for free every day. How about a little bit of input from you? We don't ask you for any money. We don't ask you for anything. Just, like, all we ask for is a few simps to bring Ailish chips. That's it. And you to send some texts every Tuesday.
Not
that
hard, guys.
You. Okay? Where are those chips, you simps? I'm hungry.
So the Toronto Raptors enjoyed a little off day in Oakland yesterday. Not entirely off. They practiced, where we heard that Yuta Watanabe went through a full session and is likely to be back in the lineup Wednesday at Memphis.
Love it.
OG Anunoby, per Doug Smith, also the wording was they would not be surprised if he plays Wednesday. Isak Bonga.
Bing Bonga.
And David Johnson are also back up with the team.
Oh, nice.
Because the 905 don't play until Saturday. Now,
sorry to interrupt you. I saw a bunch of people responding to that tweet of yours with Bing Bong, and I went and liked them all just happening. So then they know that I see them.
Yeah.
And also,
I got DMs
about Bing Bong
on our photo shoot that said Bing Bong.
Oh, yeah. My God.
And this is not just a Toronto thing. Like, my guy, Robbie Calland, who is like an Atlanta based sports betting and college football guy, he's getting in on the Bing Bong. It's spreading.
Yeah. I should have trademarked that while I had the chance.
Yeah, you blew it.
You blew it. Poor Isak would have been like, what is Bing Bong and why is it? Why am I getting asked
like
if
really
it's okay for this girl to trademark my name?
Yeah. It is okay.
So the Raptors had a day to clear their heads a little bit and get some practice in. They'll have another today before they get back in action at Memphis on Wednesday. They sit at 8-10 right now. We said heading into this 6-game road trip, which is their toughest trip of the season, if they could come out of it at 10-10, however they got there, we'd be okay with that. We'd feel decent about where the team's at. Now, narratively, it hasn't gone awesome over this last little bit. Reintegrating Siakam has been fine offensively, but the defense is cratered. And, you know, we saw JD, I know you got a bad beat from those Grizzlies last night. So JD knows full well that the Grizzlies are a tough team to put away.
I've watched like 4 Grizzlies games this year. That's way too many Grizzlies games, especially since like...
They weren't on your... league pass rankings.
Well, the worst part is that I saw one live and I was so excited to see John Morant, and he had by far his worst game of the year. He had zero dunks. Zero.
So here's where the Raptors are at. They're 8-10.
Yeah.
They're about to play at Memphis, who just had a crazy comeback against Utah on the road. Mm-hmm. And then they play Indiana, who were looking very bad and blew out our Bulls by over 30 last night for their second win in a row. And the Pacers are like the team that when you look at like luck adjustments and stuff like that, they've had some bad fortune so far. So these aren't easy games ahead either. Then it's 10 of 11 at home. Mm-hmm. With 2 days off, we're going to reset a little bit here. We're going to do our second edition of Raptors Concern Index. And for anyone who doesn't know, basically JD and Ailish are going to throw things at me that they may or may not be concerned about the Toronto Raptors through their 8-10 start. And I will give it a rating from 1 to 5, 1 being... I'm not concerned. Why are we talking about this? 5 being, I'm so concerned I don't want to talk about this. and anywhere in between about a number of things going on with the Toronto Raptors right now. So I pass it to one of you guys.
I got to tell you, the one thing that is low on the Raptors concern index for me, though, is the actual schedule. There really does feel like there's this, I don't know. I just was looking at it yesterday, trying to come up with narratives and trying to come up with things that I wanted to ask Blake about, because then I thought maybe the schedule would be one of them. And yeah, Grizzlies, Pacers, Celtics, Grizzlies again, the Thunder, Knicks, Kings, like those are all in the next 10 games. And this kind of does actually feel like a bit of a soft spot coming up here where you're going to need to pad some wins if you're going to remain like a relevant team in the playoff race. If you start, it starts with these 2 last road games. I feel like you got to at least split these, but then that homestand you mentioned, it doesn't feel that daunting. And if you do get people back like OG and now Siakam's had some games under his belt, I kind of feel as though this is sort of the, hey, Raptors, make your stand moment. So these things that we bring up on the concern index today, kind of feel like, Blake, we're throwing them to you in preparation of, hey, can they actually do this over this sort of softer stretch that does include some tough games, but overall is pretty light?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, look, anytime you have 10 of 11 at home, I don't care. Like if you're playing the Golden State Warriors 5 times in that stretch, you gotta stack some wins. Like there's not going to be a better chance on the schedule, not an extended one anyway, to kind of get that comfort level. And now they close the season with 8 of 10 at home too. So like maybe there's a last ditch there, but you don't want to be entering late March being like, oh, we have to kill it for these last 10 games. And you certainly don't want to be, if at that point you're not very good and you're being like, hey, the play-in's not for us. Let's look at lotto odds. You certainly don't want to be benching your guys for 8 of 10 games at home down the stretch. So this is their chance to make up a little ground. Memphis and Indiana are not easy road opponents, but they're winnable games. And then, yeah, the schedule is not crazy daunting. So
what's your number on the ranking there?
There's window ahead. On the schedule? One? There's nothing. They don't have a back-to-back until the middle of December right now.
Yeah.
So in terms of rest and working injured guys back in and workloads and stuff like that, December 14th is the next time they play on the second night of a back-to-back.
Okay. So speaking of working injured people back into the lineup, I still don't feel like Pascal Siakam is fully ready to say, okay, he's back to full health. So that's my disclaimer before I ask this question. Let's say when he's fully returned to full form, he's still not the guy that we're looking for. And also, side note, Raptors Twitter just shredding him every single opportunity that they have. What's your concern index on that?
Yeah, my concern index on Raptors Twitter is like a 4, not because I think it matters that they're doing that, but I'm concerned for their own health. Like it's an 82 game season is long, and I understand that the Pascal Siakam stuff is very high leverage right now, but if you were going to treat 82 games as a referendum on whether Siakam is the right guy and what direction this franchise is going in, that's exhausting, and guys are going to have good games and bad games. Like Steph Curry and Nikola Jokic are like almost the exceptions, but even the other night Curry had 12 points on poor shooting. Like guys have poor nights, and Siakam's only 7 games back. So the Raptors Twitter thing, I'm worried about all of their mental health. Pascal Siakam's actual fit is, I'm going to say it's a 2.5. I think it's really weird that the defense has been so bad since he got back, and I don't think that's his fault. I think he's had some good games and some bad games, but I think it's more a good snapshot of all this lineup turmoil they've had and the lack of familiarity among their top guys. And then the concern's a little lower on the offensive side because the Raptors have scored better with Siakam on the court than with any other player on the court. Their offense has actually been really good during this down stretch. It's kind of a weird thing where they've gone the opposite way of what we thought they'd look like. And Siakam's had, you know, he had that one big stinker that stands out. But you look, and he's averaging 18 points and almost 4 assists and not in crazy huge minutes. And he's been very, very efficient within those. This would be his highest true shooting percentage since the championship season. And I think, more qualitatively, he's finding the right balance of like, hey, how big is my role in this offense? He's using fewer possessions than each of the last 2 years, I think, because there's a consciousness of, hey, Gary Trent was cooking. Fred's been controlling a lot of this. You know, there have to be opportunities for Scottie Barnes, even though Barnes is maybe hitting the rookie wall a bit. So I'm not too concerned. I want to give it a little bit more time. It's only 7 games. I want to see, you know, we need sample on OG Siakam Barnes is the big thing. So I'm kind of hitting pause on the concern with that trio.
I got to tell you that to me, the concern index on Siakam, if I got to give a number,
which you do,
is low. My concern index on Pascal Siakam conversations is very high because it's just, I find it to be so impossible for anybody to actually hear what the truth is about Siakam. He is a max player who has put a lot of pressure on his shoulders, but also it has a very high ceiling when he's doing his best and a very low floor for a guy who's a max player. Like, I watch the league every night. There's not a lot of guys who can have a 4-point night the way that Siakam can that are on max contracts. There are also not a lot of guys in the NBA who, on a given night, can look like Siakam did against the Sacramento Kings.
30 points on 12 field goal attempts or whatever. Like, literally has not happened in the NBA this season.
And so I find it actually so frustrating that there's always this, when Siakam has a good game, people go, the haters are wrong. Hey, look, he proved the haters wrong. I saw that after the game. And then he has a bad game and people go, he sucks, he stinks. And so to me, the concern index is just, you know, people having conversations. To me, he's very easy. He's an inconsistently really good player. His floor is very low. His ceiling is very high. He has trouble regulating between those two things. And the biggest thing that is like an actual concern index with the player is, you know what? He's probably not, you know, the greatest option as a closing player on a high caliber team, But you know what? Not a lot of guys are. And yeah. Siakam is not a problem on this roster. But there maybe are going to be some questions with the fit. And so people who also question that, like, I don't know why that's such a huge issue. So Siakam conversations, is five the highest number?
Yeah.
5 out of 5 on the concern index ranking. Like, can we not just have Siakam conversations that are not definitive given on whatever he does that night?
This is what I mean, is like, please. You don't, like, especially like, yeah, if one of your arguments at this point is, hey, Siakam's inconsistent, well, then maybe if you're acknowledging that, you shouldn't overreact to every bad game and every great game. Also, just in terms of the max contract, like, yeah, they gave him that super max bump, and I don't think...
But it does matter.
It does matter. I didn't say it doesn't matter. I just am trying to recenter us here. Mm. He's the 21st highest paid player in the league. So that suggests that he is a low-end number one. That's what he's paid like. He's not paid like a high-end number one. He's like the 21st guy. 26 guys make the All-Star team. Mm-hmm. So he's paid like a borderline All-Star.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that's tough because it has the max designation and because of who came before on max deals and because $33 million is a lot of money. But to kind of reset it with context, that's where he's at. He's expected to be a top 20, top 25 player. And if he's top 15, awesome.
Uh-huh.
He obviously hasn't been that level of guy this season. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't think, like you said, the Sacramento game, he's not that far from being a top 25 player if he can string more of them together.
Yeah. I don't think he's a top 30 player in the NBA. I don't think that but he's somewhere in the mix of like 30 to 40.
Here's the thing. He makes $3 million more than the 31st highest paid player.
Yeah,
in the
league. That's what I mean. And so I've never had an issue with the contract. I've always fully understood the contract, but I also understand that fans reasonably, I think in a sport where the best player matters more than any other, gravitate towards the highest paid guy. If they're not carrying the team to wins, they're going to have questions about that. So
and
that
it's
just
your
makes
thing.
Sense.
It's like, that's what the money's for,
right?
It's
exactly.
Like, of course when you sign a max contract, you sign up for those expectations and stuff. So that's obviously, this is the story of the rest of the season is Siakam's fit and how everything works together. Next item of concern.
Raptors are last in assist percentage.
Yeah. That's just a deep sigh. Is that a concern index?
Well, that shows me that it's kind of either a 4 or 5. I'm going to run down some just numbers that pop to me.
Yeah,
I'm going to be the numbers guy, but last in assist percentage.
Throw a couple numbers at me and I'll rank them in terms of concern.
Last in assist percentage, 23rd in field goal percentage, 25th in shooting percentage, yet somehow 8th in offensive rating. And they're, I think, dead last in pace or 28th in pace, I wrote down. They're 28th in pace and 20th in rebounding. Those all, again, this is the concern index, so I didn't put the positive numbers other than 8th in offensive rating, but those to me really popped when it came to, we've been spending a lot of time recently talking about the defensive struggles, and I'm wondering if the bar for the offense was so low that we're watching Gary Trent play well and Fred VanVleet play well and Siakam have some good nights and Barnes be better than expected, that we're kind of missing that the offense, according to the numbers, is quite bad.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even say bad necessarily, as it is like stagnant in the half court, which we expected. I would say of those numbers, the one I'm least concerned with is pace, because we can, obviously pace is a full game stat, right?
I was going to say, I still don't even like truly, like I'm always looking at it. I'm like,
to be honest, when you said pace, I'm like Googling, like, what does, like,
No. I understand pace. Mm-hmm. I just look at it sometimes and I say, well, I don't think that it's necessarily a positive thing that you're the highest team in pace. That's the thing.
Yeah, but not good or bad.
No.
It's just a descriptor.
But can I just inject one thing with the Raptors? Shouldn't it be a little more important that they play with a higher pace given that, you know, they don't have a good half-court offense?
So here's the thing. Here's where pace is a helpful thing for adjusting rate stats and getting a description of how a team plays. The more useful way to look at it, and we can do this at pbpstats.com, we can break pace into offensive pace and defensive pace.
Oh,
and so this is where, hey, pace itself doesn't tell us much. And the Raptors are very slow. But the reason that they're so slow is that their defensive pace is the slowest in the league. Now, what that means is, so imagine a 24-second shot clock and the other team's trying to score on you. The Raptors grind teams down later in the shot clock on average than any other defense.
Hmm.
So on average, an opponent is shooting against the Raptors with 8 seconds left on the shot clock. That's the lowest in the league. And we know that over the course of the shot clock, efficiency goes down. That's a league-wide thing. That's, we have to exclude like offensive rebounds and stuff because that skews the numbers. But the Raptors grind opponents down defensively more than any other team. So that's part great. Of why their pace number. Offensively, they're an average pace team. Mm-hmm. Now, within that, they should probably not be an average pace team. They probably should be faster than that because they're the number two team in transition opportunities. Mm-hmm. So they are getting out and running, and this is their whole gambit defensively, right? Is like they're gambling for those steals and they're sending extra help and stuff so that they can get out and run. But when you get down to the half court, that's when things really gum up. So I would say that my concern with the actual pace is a 1 out of 5 because it could actually be looked at as a positive. My concern with the look like digging in on the specifics of their offense and what goes into that, my concern is a 3 out of 5 because they're 23rd in half court offensive efficiency, but we also expected that. Mm-hmm. So it's a concern because it's hard to win that way, but it's not a major concern because this was the book on them. This is what we expected coming in.
Did we expect it though to this degree? Again, 23rd in field goal percentage, 25th in true shooting percentage, last in assist percentage. One of the things that I thought was going to happen when we saw that Scottie Barnes was a little bit more advanced, and I know that you've raised some question marks as to the playmaking translating to the NBA so far.
Yeah, yeah. I just think his playmaking in like on the fly is more advanced than his half-court playmaking.
Okay.
But I don't think it's not going to translate in general. I think it's going to get there. Just right now, one is ahead of the other.
Just to be last in assist percentage when, and I know Fred VanVleet is kind of more of a shooting guard than he is actually a true point guard, but when you drafted Scottie Barnes, I thought, hey, playmaking. Siakam is supposed to be playmaking. OG is always touted for his intelligence and his ability to pass the ball. Fred is obviously someone who's an unselfish player that will move the basketball and knows how to buy into things. I will say that to be last in assist percentage, I know part of that is connected to 23rd and field goal shoot percentage.
Can't
and
get assists on a bucket that doesn't drop.
Right, but are you like maybe a little bit more concerned with that number? Like, does that one pop maybe a bit more? Because the field goal percentage and the true shooting percentage, I kind of expected, especially given the injuries they've had. Assist percentage, that one speaks to me a little bit more when your team is built around we're supposed to be sharing and different guys who can contribute, and we know that there's not a lot of isolation scores on this team.
Yeah, it's that's certainly more concerning. And assists are somewhat similar to pace, where assists on their own are not like the goal, right? Like you would, it's certainly more aesthetically pleasing if you are getting a lot of assists and, you know, the Spurs, the beautiful game approach and stuff like that. But you look back and the Raptors have had some really elite offenses without having high assist percentages in the past. So it's more about, you know, what do you think holds up best in the playoffs? And that was kind of the flaw of the DeMar years, or the pre-Kawhi years, we'll call them, because that was a low assist team and it got a little easier to defend in the playoffs when you can key in on one guy in those isolation situations. So I think, yeah, it's a little bit of a concern. I think, you know, you have Gary Trent does not like the pass, and that can kind of gum things up. And here's the real thing with limited playmaking or a limited assist percentage. It's good that guys can self-create. Like, you want to have that as a skill. It's a really important thing to have when plays break down and stuff. What's not great, though, is if guys aren't shot ready and aren't willing to take the shots that are created by other people elsewhere, that lets a defense reset, right? Like, if you kick it out to Gary Trent and Gary Trent takes a sidestep dribble before he lets that three go, that's a sidestep dribble length of time where the defense can get back in position, and they can get back in position for the next pass or the defensive rebound or whatever. And I'm just using Gary Trent as an example. But that's part of the issue is, so this is, again, the assist thing is like pace, where it's good to have guys who can self-create, but you don't want that too far to the extreme. So this is, again, this is probably a 3 out of 5 where I would love to see it be a little more free-flowing, a little more, you know, to their hopeful identity of share the ball. Everyone can put it on the floor and pass a little bit. I will say the assist percentage has been higher since Pascal Siakam returned and when he's on the court. So maybe there's going to be an additive effect there with another forward who can who can play make. But yeah, they're a little behind where I think they'd hope to be in that regard right now.
Okay. Speaking of being behind where you'd hope to be, coming into the season, offense was kind of the question mark. Well, kind of. It was definitely the question mark. No one's going to score on this team. Now, defense is the big hole. They're 30th in the last 9 games. I'm assuming that's going to be high on your concern index.
Yeah, I'm going to give it the old 4.5.
Oh,
I won't go all the way to 5 because they were good early in the season, and there's some element of like, hey, opponents have hit some, you know, hit shots. We have the ability to look at, you know, what's the expected field goal percentage based on where the opponent's getting their shots from and stuff. And they've had a little bit of bad luck during that stretch. But the reason my concern is so high is, one, they've stopped doing all the things. So I talk a lot about this aggressive strategy where they want to trap and they want to pinch and they want to, you know, they do a great job getting the ball out of Steph Curry's hands. And it's like, okay, but then Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins are wide open for a boatload of threes.
Mm-hmm.
So they have been, for 3 years now, one of the highest volume corner three teams allowed and one of the highest volume sending opponents to the free throw line teams. Those are the strategy things that they just accept as part of this, like part of their scheme and part of how they make up for no rim protection. Where the concern comes in is that they have stopped taking care of the defensive rebounding side. They have stopped keeping teams actually away from the rim. Opponents are shooting 71% at the rim over that 9-game stretch, which is a very high mark. It's almost two Precious Achiuas in terms of at-rim field goal percentage. So the concern there is high. And then the other reason the concern is high is that they have a lot of good defensive personnel. And I don't care what the specifics are going into it. If you are the worst defense in basketball for a 3-week stretch and you are supposed to be a good defensive team and a team we talked about as potentially a top 10 defense, and you have all this defensive personnel, that's a problem. And OG Anunoby being in and out of the lineup and Ken Burch and Pascal Siakam, yeah, all those things, Fred VanVleet missed a game, all those things are relevant, but zoom out, and with this level of defensive personnel and a very good defensive-minded coach with a track record of success on that end, it's pretty inexcusable to be 30th for any extended stretch of time.
Okay. I totally expected that one to be high on the rankings.
More on that in my next Fast Breakdown. Ooh. On the Sportsnet YouTube channel, by the way. I think that'll
good
be
plug.
Thursday.
Good yeah. plug. So this one I'm torn on. I am very excited that Delano Banton is so fun and such a great story. Obviously him being a Rexdale guy, coming up in the second round pick and dominating. But my concern index question for you is that more of an indication of their depth that he's their number one bench guy after being a second round pick?
Yeah, I'm going to call that a 3.5 because, again, I don't want to put it higher because it risks turning a positive into a negative. Mm-hmm. Banton has been a really fun story, and he looks like a legitimate guy. But, yes, you come into the season and you think you're a depth team and you think you're going to have, you know, hey, Malachi Flynn's ready to handle some stuff. Maybe Svi's a rotation guy. You know, we've got multiple bench bigs. And then this guy who we mostly expected would spend a lot of 905 time this year and who, you know, I had him graded as a second round guy coming in, but I had him, like, if you go back and look at my pre-draft stuff, it's like, oh, I really like what Banton might be able to get to after a year in the G League.
Mm.
And it was not, hey, I think this guy's ready to be a sixth or seventh man in the NBA. So yeah. It's really fun. But yeah, I think the fact that he's often the first guy off the bench, there's a concern index there in terms of Malachi Flynn, obviously, which we've talked a lot about. There's a concern index there in just, you know, that's a lot of reliance on a second round pick who probably would benefit still from G League time, even though he's been really good. And yeah, I think it's a little bit of an indictment of the rest of your depth pieces. Yeah, we should take a break. This is a lot of me talking. It's time for Ailish to talk.
Well, I was going to say, though, we should, if you want to text in your own concern index, if you want to ask Blake.
There's a couple, so I can bring that up in the text line.
Well, yeah, just if you're out there, you get a chance to ask Blake Murphy about something that you think is concerning to you. It doesn't even have to be that, obviously, because it's text line. You get to be the producer. I'm just saying. Get to pick a guy's brain that knows a lot of things. Pretty decent opportunity.
Doesn't even have, yeah, doesn't have to be Raptors. Doesn't have to be concern index.
Don't have to just text about chips.
Yeah. Whatever. But you want to talk music, wrestling?
But if you want to text about chips, you know, that will make me smile.
You want to just talk about Kasha?
Ailish,
do that too.
Ailish and I were actually Googling, trying to find ways to get those Miss Vicky's ketchup chips today.
Yeah.
Like we.
Because we are not local to a Costco, and that's the only place that sells them right now.
I can't believe that. And I know that you're the number one chip person on the show.
Yes.
Like if there's a power rankings of who knows about the snacks on the show, it's obviously you. And I'm sorry to push back this way, but I just cannot believe that in 2021, the only place you can get a snack food item is at Costco.
Well, I think they're testing it out there because that's how the spicy dill pickle started. And then it became viral and now it's everywhere.
Totally logical way to test things is, hey, let's only offer this in the largest volume possible.
But the amount of people that love it already is a good sign.
If I were rolling out a new chip, I would do small bags to make sure people like it. Something we know people like is the A-list. We're going to get to that after the break. Keep the text coming, 590, 590. It's the A-list. After the break, it's the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan.
Everyone's getting excited at the text line.
I hear this song, and I just assumed Freddie Gillespie was about to come on the show.
I wish.
Double-double machine with the Memphis Hustle.
It is Miley Cyrus's 29th birthday today, hence why we got her on the A-list. That was actually a shout-out from producer Vic, or tech guy Vic, whichever.
He's all those things.
He's all of them. Music guy Vic, he said, hey, you got to put her on the A-list. It's her birthday, so.
Wait, does that count as one of the three?
No, it's just like a intro one.
So you just can do a bonus.
Bonus A-list.
Who said I can only do three?
No one.
I can do as many as I can fit in. You guys don't shut up and I get all
them
in.
You did it. You were like, I have three things a day for the A-list, so I just assumed that was the way that the structure was.
No, I think I can start to squeeze some extras in depending on how much you talk, so.
Do you guys think, who's better than Miley Cyrus at covers? I think she's the cover goat.
Like, just her Jolene one alone. And she did something with Stevie Nicks a while back, and it was incredible.
So I will say, I don't know that I would put anyone ahead of her, but Triple J in Australia has their Like a Virgin series, and it's like Tiny Desk concerts, but they're all covers. And there's some really, really good ones if you go through their YouTube backlog.
So there's just different artists that show up in Australia. That's their Tiny Desk, and every artist does covers.
Yeah,
I gotta check that out because I love Tiny Desk.
It's amazing.
Pandemic, basically all my dates during the like shut in pandemic time were like, hey, we can't go to a concert, so let's watch some Tiny Desks.
Yeah, it's really cute. How'd that work out for you?
Poorly. I'm still single.
What's one of the best ones is. I'm drawing a blank on it. Oh, Denzel Curry doing Rage Against the Machine, I feel like is up your alley.
By the way, I got to get back to the A-list, but I love going to a bar and randomly finding out that there's a cover band there that night.
Oh, that's sweet.
And that they're just crushing songs and you crush drinks and sit there and do just a cover night. What's the band that does, oh my God. I need a second here. One night I went to Montreal, when I was in Montreal, I went and there was a band that did only covers of that band, Something on the Sun, Blister in the Sun. What's that band?
I have no
idea. Anyway, they had way more hits than I thought they did until it was over. And it was just, what a night.
They did all Violent Femmes covers?
Yes.
Not like a everything from the 90s covers?
No, Violent Femmes. They were a Violent Femmes cover band and those guys had like tons of bangers. I'm telling you, it was amazing. A complete electric factory. Back to the A-list. Sorry for my minor hijack there.
Now, it's time for...
Let us A...
A...
The A-list.
A...
Looks like I'll have time for zero A-lists today because these guys just want to talk about Tiny Desks. Just kidding, I got a couple. So, starting on the hockey side, the Nashville Predators introduced this thing pre American Thanksgiving, which is coming up. Shout out to America. So the Nashville Predators are finding a way to brand some ticket sales as the in-laws package. So what they'll be providing is two tickets to the upper bowl and two tickets to the lower bowl. So then you don't have to sit with your in-laws, but you can still treat them to a game. So it's a little package that you, hey, come on in, let's go to a game together, but we're not going to sit together. So it's called the in-laws package. And I thought that was pretty funny. And I'm sure that is like a unique marketing experience I haven't seen before. And so shout out to the Nashville Predators.
That's funny how you do it. Then right. You do it and it's like, haha, sorry.
Or you do like a swap mid-game, but basically, yeah, you're sending them up or you're sending them down. But you're still inviting
you guys,
them to a game.
That happened to you.
That's right. That was like the Marie-Philippe Poulin
in
the
experience.
Of like, it's like a totally unique thing that's never happened before, except for to me last weekend.
Yeah. But that's basically what it was. Maybe they were inspired by that story that we told.
And if anyone scores a hat trick, you have to marry your mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Come on. You're caught up on I Think You Should Leave. You gotta pick up the I Think You Should Leave references.
I totally missed that one. All right. Odell Beckham Jr. announced that he's taking his entire Rams salary in Bitcoin.
I love this.
You love this?
Yes.
So what he says is, it's a new era, and to kick that off, I'm hyped to announce that I'm taking my new salary in Bitcoin, thanks to Cash App. To all my fans out there, no matter who you are, thank you. I'm giving back a total of 1 million in Bitcoin right now, too. Drop your cash tag with whatever, some hashtag, and follow Cash App now. So it's kind of like a sponsored thing, but also that he's taking his entire salary in Bitcoin.
I liked picturing him actually writing it that way, the way you just read it, where he's like, yeah, just drop your whatever at whatever. People are like, what?
But that's also a first time thing. Somebody announcing that they'll take their salary in Bitcoin. Is that something we see moving forward?
Spencer Dinwiddie did it first in the NBA. Okay. But I think it might be the first time someone's done it in the NFL. Mm.
Spencer Dinwiddie also tried to like sell shares of himself for his next contract and stuff in a way that violated the CBA.
Oh, that's strange.
Which I loved. Which maybe is what we're having Brunt on next. Is a good way to tease Brunt coming on at 7. Brunt basically has to come on and explain everything that's happening with the Blue Jays potential sale. And like,
that's later.
This article comes out and they're like, and they might do this. And I'm like, can we please explain what that is?
What's a tracking stock?
Yeah.
Like when Michael Scott says, explain this to me like I'm 5.
Yeah.
But about taxes or about money, actually. So it was kind of on our topic.
But this is one of my actual pet peeves with any type of reporting, when people just assume that the audience knows what something called a tracking stock is or a tracking share. How am I supposed to know what that is?
And the explanation of, oh, well, the Braves do it.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Now, okay, got it.
Don't I feel stupid? Obviously, everyone in Atlanta is like, you don't know what tracking stocks are, you idiot, you stupid, dumb idiot. So, I hate the fact that I believe in Bitcoin just because the association to quote-unquote crypto bro. Mm. And when you tell people there's this whole, like, rigmarole you have to do. But no, I actually do believe in it. And yeah, I have some. And so whenever my this is how my dumb brain works. Odell Beckham Jr. says this and I go, more legitimacy for the brand. You know, the brand is building. So yeah, please.
All right.
Basically what I'm saying is this is the first thing that OBJ has done in like, I don't know, 6 years that I've
that
liked.
You liked? Okay.
Yeah. It's like, do a good football thing. How about that? Here's how much Bitcoin you should be getting for your play so far this year though, OBJ. Zero Bitcoin. Oh. 0.0.0.
Come on. Two catches for 18 yards has to be worth 0.00001 or something.
Honestly, I think I could get two catches for 18 yards.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Well, because they'd leave me wide open.
That's true. That's true.
I wouldn't survive the two catches for 18
yards.
No, but
they would land in your hands, hopefully.
Yeah, that's right.
Would they leave you wide open, though, or would they just be like, oh, we're going to send one guy to crush this guy
next year
to make bread from his bones?
Oh, my God. All right. You mentioned the Blue Jays. I got one on Robbie Ray. Mm. So following his Cy Young win this week, his 10th grade teacher, Dennis King, shared this tweet, which I just retweeted if you want to take a look at it. In 10th grade, Robbie Ray was flunking my English class. His mother said she would like him to do better, but he would be playing minor league baseball, sorry, major league baseball as a career. I strongly suggested that they would want to have a plan B. Yesterday, he won the Cy Young Award. My bad. So this reminds me of when Penny Oleksiak this year, when she racked up the, I don't know, 6 or 7 gold medals, became Canada's most decorated Olympian of all time. Kind of like did a tweet at one of her 10th grade English teachers as well, or something along those lines, saying...
Isn't she still in 10th grade?
Yeah, probably. Like, she's so young.
It's like her current class. She's like, I will miss the book report.
Thank you so much. I'm in the Olympics. But she said something like, well, remember when my teacher said... not to take swimming on as a career. And well, look at me now. So this is kind of a similar thing. But this teacher got ahead of it and said, hey, man, I messed up. Congrats on your Cy Young win.
I got to tell you, I think it was hilarious when you first said minor league, because I picture the mom being like, he's going to be a minor league baseball player.
Was that, like, was a mistake, but like that would have been bad.
$13,000 US a year, and then he'll show ya. He's going to live with like 18 guys in a house in some weird town in Myrtle Beach. I love that. But two is, okay, the teacher, I don't know. This is a weird one, because if that's really what the mom, like, if that's the verbatim thing, like, yeah, I'd like to do better, but he's going to be a major league pitcher. It's like, that's not a great story for Robbie Ray's mom.
Yeah. Like, right. She's just like, don't worry about his English.
Yeah, like, he's doing his best, but also, hey, how about you shut up, because my son's going to throw heaters. How about that? It's like, okay, English teacher, like, go sit in the corner and watch my son throw this fastball.
Ever heard of Pete Walker?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I just think about all the parents who have taken that approach and not had it work out, and that the thing about that story that sucks is that, yes, it's great to believe in yourself and to try and accomplish a dream, but it's usually not the kid that's the problem. A lot of times it is the parent who's like, my kids, don't worry about it. We're sacrificing education. We're sacrificing this. Not to make this too serious. Not to like ruin this. But don't you guys agree? It's like that parent, not Robbie Ray's mom, obviously. Robbie Ray's mom's like, this sure wasn't that way.
But there are tens of thousands of Robbie Ray's mom.
Right. Where they
and
go.
And there's only a few Robbie Ray.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I'm.
Robbie's Ray. Yeah, that's more grammatically correct.
Maybe I ruined this. Did I ruin
it? No. I thought it was a fun story.
Is there anything left on the A-list? Because I have an A-list adjacent question for you.
I had... No, go ahead.
Did you kill the Manning cast?
Yeah. I did kill the Manning cast.
You did kill the Manning cast.
Unfortunately, I was hot on the investigation towards the Manning cast...
Curse,
and now it sucks.
Well, I don't know that it sucks.
Well,
but
now they're scared to put active players on, because we outed them that there was a curse happening, and now they heard us and they're scared.
And last night they did the biggest test possible for a curse. They brought Kevin Hart on, and if Kevin Hart goes like 7 minutes without getting a new role, we'll know the Manning cast curse is real. Also, at one point, did you watch Manning cast last night, JD?
Yeah, I always watch Manning cast. Especially when the game is bad. I think it's actually better when the game is bad, because it
keeps you engaged.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I actually found myself, I almost watched that entire game last night before my attention got sucked into Grizzlies, Utah. But so I don't mind it when it's bad. I thought Bill Parcells seemed a little old, and that kind of hurt, because I was really excited for Bill Parcells, and then he came on and it was a little bit of like, I think he thought he was like trying to do play by play or something for a little while, and then it just wasn't good. And then Kevin Hart was kind of awkward. I thought that it was a pretty bad list of guests. And then Julian Edelman, who's been on everywhere, who's been plugging everything, was kind of like rehashing stories that have been out there for a while now that he's given out. And so it wasn't my favorite Manning cast by any stretch of the imagination, which sucked, because I really felt like it was a blown opportunity for the Manning cast to be happening during a Brady game. And I thought, this is going to be incredible if Brady's struggling. Mm-hmm. Because those guys have said that they're not going to criticize quarterbacks. And Brady had two really bad games in a row. And there was this one moment where he throws the interception early in the ball game and the Giants tie it up. And you go, man, the Giants are kind of hanging around in this game. And this feels like there could be a moment here. And then the second half starts and it was just a bloodbath. And I went, well, now they're just doing Eli going, what do you guys talk about at the Kentucky Derby when you're there with Tom Brady? I'm like, what?
So the answer to my question then was yes. I was going somewhere else with it, but glad you enjoyed it. Because Kevin Hart did the, like, both y'all getting clapped. He got into his 40-year-old virgin character at one point, which it wasn't intentional. I know you love that character in that scene, though.
So I actually think Kevin Hart's stand-up is underrated because it's really good. It's really, really good. Stand-up is very hard. But I think Kevin Hart himself as a, like, public figure, what do you guys think? I'm over it.
You know that I'm behind on my stand-up comedy.
The NBA
But Kevin Hart is a public figure, someone who's, like, always at everything, and you're like, okay.
The NBA tie-ins were a little thin.
That's what I mean. He's always sports adjacent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can I do one more tiny one before we break, Eilish? Is that okay?
What is this, the B-list? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
Amon Shumpert won Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, you and your Amon Shumpert Dancing with the Stars. Good God. Nobody cares.
It's been mentioned more on the show than anywhere else in the world.
Twice.
Oh, twice. God.
That's exciting, though. Congratulations.
Yeah, great. He won the show that no sports fan cares about in the universe.
Yeah. Nothing else on the A-list?
One thing that I...
Do you work for Amon Shumpert?
He might be his agent.
honest to God.
Look, man, I'm sorry. I
love like Amon Shumpert and draw a salary
from
him.
One more quick one. Okay, you guys know that I take my food takes very seriously.
Yes.
And obviously, I've put all of our listeners on those chips that will remain
them?
Unnamed because... I'm looking for some sponsorship money. So go to my Instagram story, and I've put another thing on my Instagram story that you should try out. And I'm not going to give away free advertising this time because everyone got mad at me. It's a type of chocolate bar that has something else inside the chocolate bar that will blow your mind. So go buy them, and then I put you on that, and you're welcome.
You know that if you still put it on your Instagram story and tell everyone, go check it out and go buy them, that's still free advertising, whether you say the name or not, because they're going to go see the... Anyway,
in some ways, it's worse.
We're gonna get you in a marketing.
Okay,
class
they're
or
dairy
something.
Milk chocolate bars with mini eggs.
Yeah.
They will blow your mind.
Look, I'll
you're
just say
welcome
this.
In advance. Dairy milk with mini eggs.
JD and I are big mini egg guys. So when you're doing your sweet and spicy ketchup chips that I found for you, maybe throw a bag of mini eggs in there.
All right.